And welcome back to Success Made Last. I'm Rick Tocchini. Our very special guest today is Bob Herbold, former Chief Operating Officer for Microsoft and former Senior Vice President of P&G. Welcome, Bob.
Well, thank you very much, Rick.
Our first question today for you, Bob, is why did you use the word gutsy in the title of your new book, 10 Bold Steps That Define Gutsy Leaders?
Well, you know, over the decades that I've been in business, one of the things that you clearly realize is that managers get to a certain level in the organization when all of a sudden the decisions are not easy. They're quite difficult. There's no ideal option. You can't get all the data that you want. It's guaranteed that you're going to disappoint some people. And to make decisions of that nature requires courage. It requires guts. And that's really why I selected that word, because I think it conveys a notion of conviction that people understand viscerally, and so that's the reason.
I like that. And your cover has this intriguing red stairway. Why did you put that in the design?
Well, the essence of this book is as individuals get more and more responsibility, the decisions get tougher and tougher. And from a career standpoint, a lot of people get blocked halfway up those stairs, so to speak, because they're not used to the really tough decisions. And oftentimes they lack the internal confidence and courage and guts to make those decisions. And this book hopefully will give them a fair number of tips in regard to continuing to make that climb, so to speak, from a career standpoint, and also to increase their overall capabilities as a leader to tackle tougher and tougher problems. So that's really the genesis of the thing. So that ended up, the artist, I thought, after hearing that description, was quite creative in coming up with the stairs.
It fits well into this whole image. And I wish this book were actually around 30 years ago. I could have really used it. The big cast of a long shadow is across many industries. Do you agree?
Oh, I totally agree. In fact, people in the world of nonprofits have even more difficulties making tough decisions than people in industry. And the reason why is people in industry, they get measured regularly, either by Wall Street or by their boss or whatever, and results are expected. The nonprofits often don't have those kind of crisp measures to remind them whether they're doing well or not well. Similarly, in government, getting things done, especially in the West these days, is a problem. And this book points out the kinds of characteristics that are needed in order to guide an organization well. And hopefully, really, the book will be applicable to anybody dealing with an organization, be that in a setting of education, be that in a setting of industry or whatever.
I don't want to give away all parts of the book because we obviously want people to go out and buy it, but can you share the quick story about Fiat and the important principles of their company?
Well, before I begin that description, which is, I think, a vivid one and one that you can really learn from, I should mention that on an ongoing basis, I plan to start very, very soon a blog that will go under the label of www.bobherbold.com that we will discuss these various kinds of tips and examples and the like that hopefully will enable people to, on an ongoing basis, learn some things that are valuable to them. This Fiat example I use right in the beginning of the book because I think it tells the story so well of the problem a company can get into and how they can get out of it. Not just a company, but an organization. I don't care if it's a four-person group or a 40,000-person company. you know, from the standpoint of fiat, for most of the 20th century, fiat was Italy's largest and most prestigious company. I mean, in the late 1980s and early 1990s, Fiat Auto had over a 50% market share in Italy and a very healthy pan-European business. Beginning in the mid-90s, the top management positions at that company were changed many, many times, but unfortunately they were changed among Fiat family members and friends. And they really didn't put a serious leader in charge. They continued to have bigger and bigger problems, which caused them to switch out people who were guiding the company, but it was like a handoff within the family on a continuous basis. None took the job very seriously. They certainly didn't take it seriously enough to tackle the what was a growing bureaucracy and an aging car designs, which were really slowing down and strangling the company. So in 2004, they emerged very, very close to bankruptcy, and clearly the board of directors had to do something different. And so they were right at the point of near disaster. So they hired an outsider by the name of Sergio Marchionne, a strong turnaround specialist. After interviewing lots of people when he took the job, he interviewed lots of people within the company, primarily at the middle levels of the company, as well as some outsiders that he knew, and he handpicked talent that he thought were really strong. And in some cases, these were young folks who had a very, very good track record, and he really had chemistry with them and sensed that they were really hard chargers. He put these kinds of people in all the key jobs, reorganized around the strategies that he selected to bring Fiat out of the tailspin. And 3 years later, by 2007, they were generating impressive cars, and the finances were completely turned around. The share price went from a $7 in 2004, just before they hired him, to $30 in 2007. So they were paying off big chunks of debt. The company has been really on a roll. And today it's one of the best-run auto companies in the world. There's no doubt about it. So that's the story, and it gives you the bad news, and you can analyze why the tough decisions weren't being made, and it gives you the good news in terms of how a strong leader can get in there and make some fairly simple decisions, which end up having huge impact.
It sounds like hiring from the outside is positive. Maybe we're too hardwired if you're inside of company and you lose intensity.
That's very true. In some cases, you can reach for such people within your organization. On the other hand, sometimes it's healthy to look outside and reach for outsiders as well. The important thing is that human beings are wired to eventually try to make themselves comfortable and steady, and that causes them to lose their sense of urgency. I mean, that's the issue I studied in my second book called Seduced by Success. Once people are in a job for a while, unfortunately, the human brain is wired in such a way that the brain is looking for ways to cope with problems. And once it figures out a steady state, it tends to repeat and repeat and repeat. And those individuals that look at things in fresh ways and don't bring a lot of past rules of thumb with them are of high value.
It also sounds like that inside the 10 principles, there are some controversial ones. And today, aren't there too many soft leaders who believe only in consensus management?
Well, I think that that it is. The important thing is there is a time to use consensus, and there's a time not to. And when you want to improve a process, you need input from lots of different angles where you don't have the expertise, okay? So process improvement really was the birth of teams. Unfortunately, the world went too wild on teams and consensus because especially when you're looking for innovation or creativity, consensus is the kiss of death. The way to, you know, destroy a great idea, a unique idea, an innovative idea is to expose it to a consensus committee. And the reason is everybody will chip away at it and take all the unique aspects away in order to make it average and acceptable to everyone. And average things don't sell in the marketplace. Innovative, exciting things sell. So be careful where you're using consensus. So if you're improving a process, hey, that's probably the right step. If you want a bright idea, or if you want to push for change that's going to make a big improvement or an exciting innovation in your products, you need individuals who study and have conviction as to what they believe will be powerful with the customers.
That's a great point. And built into that is the topic of following your hunch, supported by data. I think that's why your book is great for startups.
Well, it's just 40 years of battle scars. That's what it is.
Let's move to another topic that you can cover. How do you deal in general with corporate politics and making sure that people avoid conflicts that tend to block flow?
Well, the thing that we try to isolate in this book is, you know, why is it that what makes for tough decisions? What are their characteristics? And I mentioned some of those before. And then we talk about why people act the way they do. And you've noted some of the reasons we discuss, avoiding conflict and avoiding a career risk and the like. The important thing for a leader to recognize is they have to create the environment that makes people realize that they don't have to be fearful. Secondly, an individual themselves needs to realize that the boss really does want fresh thinking. And consequently, you can't sit there, assuming that the risk is too great. These are the kinds of things you need to talk over with your boss in terms of how you should be acting and the like. And the more you open that communication channel, you'll be able to get past these kinds of things in order to get at really exciting improvement. So, you know, what are really valued? What's really valued in an organization are those individuals who will step up and say what's on their mind, why they're thinking that way, and be open for criticism, be open for comment. And then they go back and adjust and come back again and say, this is what I think we should be doing and why. And keeping at it is very important. And believe me, over the long haul, it's deeply appreciated by the boss. So it's people bring a lot of these fears on themselves, but the boss also can create an environment that heightens that fear. So don't blame it all on the boss, though. Take your own responsibility and get out there and say, okay, the way I'm looking at this situation is this. Consequently, I think we should do this. And tell me how I'm thinking about this incorrectly. And give me some feedback in regard to what we should be doing here. And get that dialogue going. And don't sit on your laurels trying to simply avoid any kind of risk whatsoever.
Righto. When our listeners read your book, they will learn how to run effective meetings. And this also may be a perfect gift for knucklehead bosses that are out there.
That's very true. we live in a world where we have to deal with humans, and humans have these tendencies. And the more you can get them on the table and talk about the business and talk about the challenges of your group or your unit or your department or your division or whatever, the better off you are, because that's where the secret is in terms of vast improvement and getting ahead of your competition.
You comment on people building rhythm and building their little fiefdoms. Why are fiefdoms fostered today?
Well, it goes back to the characteristics of humans that we talked before. The human brain is wired in such a way that it is seeking comfort. It's seeking ways to solve problems, and once you figure out a way to solve it, it tries to reach for that way every time. And so this causes people, once they get into a rhythm, once they get into any kind of stable situation, most people will say, wow, what can I do to remain just as we are, stable? And so that causes people to start building the moat and create the fiefdom so that when change comes around, it affects other people and not them. And you see this over and over in organizations. When change is proposed, you can just watch people going to the sidelines trying to explain why their organization is operating just fine and they don't need to participate in this. And it's human nature, and consequently you have to take overt steps to avoid this. And some of the overt steps are to put strong players in key jobs regularly. Don't wait around. Putting fresh talent in situations is bright because it's a good idea, because it's going to cause new thinking to occur. The second thing is leaders need to recognize that reorganizing is a powerful tool. If you leave an organization the same, when it comes in tomorrow to work, it's going to do about the same thing that it did yesterday. If you reorganize, it forces people to ask the question, oh, what are we supposed to be doing now? How are we supposed to be doing it? Who do we interact with? How do we become successful? And so these kinds of tools of moving people around, reorganizing the place around new initiatives that hopefully will generate meaningful change, these are the tools that a leader needs to reach for, and the kind of thing that we talk about all the time in this book over and over. I should also mention that to get more insight into this kind of thinking, not only the website that I mentioned before, www.bobherbal.com, the blog, will continue to work at these kinds of issues and hopefully give people some valuable insights. But they can also go to Facebook and search on Bob Herbal, and you'll see dialogues and the opportunity to comment through the blogs and the like, that if people want to interact more on these points.
And how can our audience contact you?
There's another website called theherbalgroup.com where a contact point is given.
I encourage each of you to read Bob's book. It's a great one. The focus is on why we act the way we act. It's practical matter, and it's all about case studies and how to learn deeply from them.
Well, the one point I'll make is that like the other two books that I wrote, this thing is full of case studies of companies that people know well. And so there are over 30 of them in this particular book that you really can learn from. So I try to illustrate these points, not only by my own experience, but studying companies closely like Hyundai, which has done marvelous things recently. And Volkswagen, in terms of some of the blunders they've made with the Phaeton, Honda, in terms of how they have been such a leader in manufacturing. It goes on and on. 3M, Deere, Tyco, Target, Vodafone. There are just all kinds of companies that we discuss in this book because they are rich in learning. Each of these examples are either positive in terms of somebody doing something really, really well, or negative in terms of a big mistake they made and why they fell into the trap.
So my challenge is get some guts, buy this book, and we're excited for you, Bob. We wish that, again, we had this book in our midst 30 years ago to help us.
Well, thank you very much, Rick, for the opportunity to talk.
Thank you, Bob. That was Bob Herbold. And we will feature his book on our website, successmadetolast.com, this coming month. Thanks for joining us. And as we always say, remember this, be the best version of you. Have a great week. So thanks to our sponsor, Edward Jones. They are our trusted financial advisor. And Edward Jones has been instrumental in helping us pivot our lives built around health, happiness, travel, and adding value to other people's lives. You can contact our advisor, Serban Marasini, by emailing him at serban.marasine@edwardjones.com. And thanks again to their sponsorship of this program.